إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون.
Surely, Allah enjoins justice, kindness, and the doing of good to kith and kin, and forbids all that is shameful, evil, and oppressive. He exhorts you so that you may be mindful. Surely, Allah enjoins justice, kindness, and the doing of good to kith and kin, and forbids all that is shameful, evil, and oppressive. This directive, which has been so succinctly expressed, enjoins on people three principles which provide the basis for the sound ordering of human society. The first and foremost principle is justice, which comprises two independent truths. One, that there be balance and right proportion among human beings in respect of their rights. Two, that every person be granted his rights without any distinction. The word used in Urdu as an equivalent of adl, justice, is insaf. This word creates some confusion. It somehow leads people to believe that in the distribution of rights between two or more persons, the basis should be nisf and nisf, half and half. It is presumably for this reason that justice has come to signify equal distribution of rights. This is, however, quite contrary to nature. What justice really demands is balance and right proportion rather than absolute equality. True, in certain respects, equality among members of society, such as in respect of the rights of citizenship, is a requirement of justice. However, equality in certain other matters is diametrically opposed to the requirements of justice. For instance, it would be sheer injustice if we were to grant children equal rights with their parents, or to equally compensate those who worked hard and well and those who do not. Hence, what God has commanded is not equality in rights. He has rather commanded balance in right proportion. This requires that the moral, social, economic, legal, political, and cultural rights to which a person is entitled should be granted to him with sincerity. The second principle is benevolence, to be literal, doing good, which broadly embraces all such good acts as politeness, generosity, sympathy, tolerance, courtesy, forbearance, mutual accommodation, mutual consideration, giving to others more than what is their due, and being content for oneself with a little less than what one is entitled to. This principle goes a step further than justice and is hence in some respects even more important for man's social life than justice. If justice is the foundation on which the structure of a society should rest, then benevolence represents the beauty and perfection of that structure. Benevolence adds to it the elements of pleasance and sweetness. No society can be sustained merely on the principle that every member of it should be jealously watchful of and insistent upon receiving every bit of his right and be willing to grant others exactly what is their due, but absolutely no more. Perhaps such a cold and stark society might, thanks to the application of justice as conceived above, be able to avoid internal conflicts. However, such a society will be utterly devoid of such life-giving and life-sustaining values as love and compassion, gratitude and magnanimity, and sacrifice and goodwill for others. The third principle enunciated in this verse is liberality to kith and kin. This is a corollary of the former principle, benevolence, when it is applied to one's relatives. This consists not only of sharing one's joy and sorrows with one's kin, and in helping and supporting the fulfillment of their legitimate desires within permissible limits, but also that one should recognize that one's wealth ought not to be spent exclusively on oneself and one's immediate family. Other members of the family also have a share in it. God's law requires rich persons to take care of the needs of their relatives and not to leave them to go about without proper food and clothing. According to the Quranic standard of judgment, a society in which some people are immersed in luxury, whereas other members of their family remain unprovided for, even with the basic necessities of life, is an unhealthy society. The needy members of a family have a prior claim to receive assistance from their relatives, and it is only after this that they have a claim to assistance from others. To put it conversely, the prosperous members of a family are required to assist their own relatives in need before assisting any others. This principle has been explicitly enunciated by the Prophet, peace be upon him, in a number of his statements. It has been stated in several traditions that a person's parents, his wife, his children, and his brothers and sisters have the first and foremost right against him. These are followed by those who are next to them in kinship, the principle being the closer the relationship, the more is the claim, and vice versa. Guided by this principle, Umar made it incumbent on the cousin of an orphan to undertake the latter's maintenance. Likewise, he stated that if that orphan had no close relative but only a distant one, the latter would be responsible for the orphan's maintenance. If each family looks after its members, it can be well imagined how widely spread would economic prosperity be in that society. How harmonious and pleasant would be the interrelationship of its members be, and how sublime and lofty would the moral standards operating in it be. He exhorts you so that you may be mindful. In contrast to the three moral principles mentioned above, God forbids three vices which corrupt both individuals and society at large. The first and foremost of these vices is fahsha, which embraces the whole range of evil and shameful deeds. Every vice which is intrinsically of a highly representable character falls into this category, whether it be miserliness, fornication, nudity, homosexuality, marrying those with whom marriage is forbidden, stealing, drinking, begging, or hurling abuses and outrageously rude words at others. Likewise, it also covers those evil acts which are committed publicly or which lead to the propagation of corruption, such as slander, calumny, publicizing the hidden sins of others, inciting people to moral corruption, be it by so-called belles lettres, plays or films, nude pictures, appearance of women in public with alluring makeup, promiscuous mixing between men and women, appearance of women on the stage to dance and twist their bodies, and the display of other forms of female coquetry. The next category of vice referred to is evil, which is universally acknowledged as bad and immoral. Included in it are all evils which have been unanimously condemned by the human conscience and which have been forbidden by the divine law in all ages. The third category of vice which is forbidden is transgression. This stands for the exceeding on anyone's part one's proper limits and usurping the rights of others, whether those rights be those of God or of fellow human beings.
وَأَوْفُوا بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ إِذَا عَاهَدتُّمْ وَلَا تَنقُضُوا الْأَيْمَانَ بَعْدَ تَوْكِيدِهَا وَقَدْ جَعَلْتُمُ اللَّهَ عَلَيْكُمْ كَفِيلًا إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْلَمُ مَا تَفْعَلُونَ.
And fulfill the covenant which you have made with Allah, and do not break your oaths after having firmly made them, and after having made Allah your witness. Surely, Allah knows all that you do.
وَلَا تَكُونُوا كَالَّتِي نَقَضَتْ غَزْلَهَا مِنْ بَعْدِ قُوَّةٍ أَنْكَاثًا تَتَّخِذُونَ أَيْمَانَكُمْ دَخَلًا بَيْنَكُمْ أَنْ تَكُونَ أُمَّةٌ هِيَ أَرْبَى مِنْ أُمَّةٍ. إنما يبلوكم الله به وليبينن لكم يوم القيامة ما كنتم فيه تختلفون.
And do not become like the woman who, after having painstakingly spun her yarn, caused it to disintegrate into pieces. You resort to oaths as instruments of mutual deceit, so that one people might take greater advantage than another, although Allah puts you to the test through this. Surely, on the day of resurrection, He will make clear the truth concerning the matters over which you differed. And do not become like the woman who, after having painstakingly spun her yarn, caused it to disintegrate into pieces. This verse explains three kinds of covenants and exhorts the believers to fulfill their obligations to each of them. These covenants are described in descending order of importance. The covenant of highest importance is the one made by man with God. The second, in importance, is the covenant that has been reinforced by invoking God's name. The last category consists of agreements made with others without invoking the name of God. This is less important than the other two. However, it is imperative that the obligations incurred by all these covenants be fulfilled, for it is not permitted to breach any one of the above categories of covenant. You resort to oaths as instruments of mutual deceit, so that one people might take greater advantage than another, although Allah puts you to the test through this. Here, the worst kind of breach of covenant is specifically mentioned and denounced. The reason for its denunciation is that this kind of breach causes the greatest corruption and mischief. Strangely, this kind of breach is committed by people of stature who do so considering it an act of virtue and who win acclaim from their people for doing so. In the course of the political, economic, and religious conflicts between groups and nations, it often happens that the leader of one group or nation enters into an agreement with another. Subsequently, the leader of that group or nation brazenly violates that agreement or acquires some illegitimate advantages by violating it, and does so under the plea of promoting the interests of his group or nation. Even those who are righteous in their personal lives feel no qualms in committing such a breach of agreement. Their own community does not censure them. It does not charge them for having committed an evil act. On the contrary, they are patted on the back, and their petty cunning is acclaimed as the height of diplomatic astuteness. God warns against such an attitude. Every agreement puts the morality and integrity of the person and the group who are a party to it to the test. Those who fail the test will not escape being brought to account for it in the majestic court of God. Surely, on the day of resurrection, He will make clear the truth concerning the matters over which you differed. It is only on the day of judgment that one will know which among the conflicting views prevalent in the world was right. However, even those who are altogether right in their views have recourse to breach of commitment or to lie and slander and are deceitful against their opponents, even if their worldview is totally erroneous and false. Such an attitude is altogether faulty. For devotion to truth requires not only that one's worldview and purpose be based on truth, but the means used to promote it should also be fair and honest. Such a warning is especially needed with regard to religious groups, which are often under the illusion that God is permanently on their side, and that their opponents are God's rebels. The former, therefore, have a right to hurt the latter by all possible means. They consider themselves free of all restraint in dealing with those whom they consider to be God's enemies. Against such people, they need not be bound by the dictates of truthfulness, trustworthiness, and faithfulness to commitment. That is exactly what the Jews of Arabia used to say. We will not be taken to task for whatever we may do to the non-Jews. Ummis, Al-Imran 375. In other words, they considered themselves free to deal with Gentiles as they pleased. They considered themselves free to commit breach of faith and to resort to any other means, fair or foul, which would serve the interests of those who were dear to God, for instance, Jews, and hurtful to their opponents, for instance, Gentiles. They were sure they would not be taken to task by God regardless of what they did.
وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَجَعَلَكُمْ أُمَّةً وَاحِدَةً وَلَكِنْ يُضِلُّ مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَلَتُسْأَلُنَّ عَمَّا كُنْتُمْ تَعْمَلُونَ.
Had Allah so willed, He would have made you all one single community. However, He lets go astray whomsoever He wills, and shows the right way to whomsoever He wills. Surely, you shall be called to account regarding what you did. Had Allah so willed, He would have made you all one single community. This further explains the contents of the preceding note. If someone considers himself to belong to God's party and strives to promote his religion and to wipe out all other religions, resorting in that connection to foul means, he is guilty of going against God's will. For had God wanted that all religious differences among human beings be totally wiped out, leaving no choice in matters of religion and forcing all men willy-nilly to embrace one single religion, He could have done so without the help of those who claim to be of His own God's party. God was well able to achieve that purpose by the use of His power. He could have created all men to be born believing in and submitting to God's imperatives, and so deprived them of the capacity to disbelieve and disobedience. Had God so willed, who could have deviated in the least from faith and obedience? However, He lets go astray whomsoever He wills, and shows the right way to whomsoever He wills. The opportunity that man enjoys to make a choice between alternative ways out of his own free will has been granted to him by none other than God Himself. Hence, the ways that men will choose are bound to be diverse. For anyone who seeks to end up in error, God makes it possible to choose error. But whoever seeks to be directed to the straight path, God also makes it possible.
وَلَا تَتَّخِذُوا أَيْمَانَكُمْ دَخَلًا بَيْنَكُمْ فَتَزِلَّ قَدَمٌ بَعْدَ ثُبُوتِهَا وَتَذُوقُوا السُّوءَ بِمَا صَدَدْتُمْ عَن سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَلَكُمْ عَذَابٌ عَظِيمٌ
Do not make your oaths a means of deceiving one another, or else your foot may slip after having been firm, and you may suffer evil consequences because of hindering people from the way of Allah. A mighty chastisement awaits you. Do not make your oaths a means of deceiving one another, or else your foot may slip after having been firm. This verse emphatically admonishes the believers to adhere to righteous conduct. At times, those who are otherwise intellectually convinced that Islam is sound may observe the misbehavior and corruption of Muslims, and this may deter them from joining the fold of Islam. The reason being that they did not find the Muslims with whom they came into contact any better in their moral conduct than the unbelievers.
وَلَا تَشْتَرُوا بِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ ثَمَنًا قَلِيلًا إِنَّمَا عِندَ اللَّهِ هُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ
Do not barter away the covenant of Allah for a paltry gain. Verily, that which is with Allah is far better for you, if you only knew. Do not barter away the covenant of Allah. Reference is made here to the commitment made by the Muslims in the name of God, or as representatives of the religion enjoined by God, for a paltry gain. To urge people not to barter away the covenant of God for a paltry gain does not mean that one may do so for a substantial gain. The purpose of this directive is to emphasize that worldly gains, howsoever big they may be, are paltry in comparison with God's covenant. Thus, bartering away God's covenant will always lead man to suffer loss, no matter what he receives in return for it.
مَا عِندَكُمْ يَنْفَدُ وَمَا عِندَ اللَّهِ بَاقٌ وَلَنَجْزِيَنَّ الَّذِينَ صَبَرُوا أَجْرَهُمْ بِأَحْسَنِ مَا كَانُوا يَعْمَلُونَ
Whatever you have is bound to pass away, and whatever is with Allah will last. And we shall surely grant those who have been patient their reward according to the best of what they did. Whatever you have is bound to pass away, and whatever is with Allah will last. And we shall surely grant those who have been patient their reward. Those who have been patient are those who adhere to truth and honesty in utter disregard of all temptations, desires, and lusts. They are the ones who endure all losses which accrue to them as a result of strictly confining themselves to fair and honest means and spurning all advantages which ensue from adopting unfair methods. Such persons are prepared to wait till the very end of their worldly life, after which they will be able to observe the good consequences of their deeds.
من عمل صالحا من ذكر أو أنثى وهو مؤمن فلنحيينه حياة طيبة ولنجزينهم أجرهم بأحسن ما كانوا يعملون
Whosoever acts righteously, whether a man or a woman, and embraces belief, we will surely grant him a good life, and will surely grant such persons their reward according to the best of their deeds. Whosoever acts righteously, whether a man or a woman, and embraces belief, we will surely grant him a good life.
This verse aims at removing the misunderstanding that might be entertained by believers and unbelievers alike. This misunderstanding consists of the belief that one who follows the path of truth, honesty, and righteousness is bound to ruin his worldly life. At best, such a person may be able to achieve success in the next life, but as far as this world is concerned, no good results can be expected. In response, it is pointed out that such a supposition is altogether erroneous. Anyone who adopts the right attitude will not only be able to enjoy success in the next life, but will also achieve success in the present life. Those who are righteous, straightforward in their dealings, and virtuous in their conduct are perceptibly better, even in their worldly life, than those who are devoid of faith and good morals. For it is they alone who enjoy the confidence and genuine respect of people because of their unblemished character. The kind of success which they enjoy, therefore, cannot fall to the share of those who pursue success by all possible means, including those that are outrageously foul. The righteous, even when their material conditions are unenviable, enjoy an inner peace and tranquility which is beyond the reach of evildoers, even when they live in ostentatious luxury.
And will surely grant such persons their reward according to the best of their deeds.
In the next life, the righteous will achieve a status consonant with their best deeds. In other words, a person who does good deeds in this present world, be they of major or minor significance, will be generously rewarded. Even for minor acts of goodness, such a person will receive the reward which people merit for good deeds of major significance.
فَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ.
Whenever you read the Quran, seek refuge with Allah from Satan, the accursed. Whenever you read the Quran, seek refuge with Allah from Satan, the accursed.
This does not simply mean that before starting to recite the Quran, one should simply utter the words, I seek refuge with Allah from Satan, the accursed. Seeking refuge with God against Satan should not merely involve a man's tongue, but also his heart. In addition, the desire to free oneself from Satan's evil prompting should be backed up by practical efforts to keep oneself secure against uncalled-for doubts and suspicions. Such a person should make a serious effort to view the Quran in its right perspective, allowing the Quran to leave the imprint of its true teachings on his mind. He should take every precautionary measure to avoid distorting the Quran. One should beware of this, since many people are wont to interpret the Quran in the light of their own ideas, fancies, or inclinations derived from extraneous sources. The result is that they understand the Quran in disregard of, or even as contrary to the intent which God embodies in it. One should also never forget that Satan's greatest wish is that man should always remain deprived of obtaining guidance from the Quran. Hence, whenever a person turns to the Quran, Satan leaves no stone unturned to prevent him from deriving guidance from it and to directing his thoughts instead along erroneous paths. One should therefore be highly vigilant while studying the Quran and should constantly invoke God's help, lest one fail to be directed to the guidance it embodies owing to Satan's machinations. If someone fails to obtain guidance from the Quran, he will obtain guidance from nowhere. And if someone is so unfortunate that he derives false and erroneous doctrines from the Quran, nothing in the world will be able to rescue him from misguidance and doctrinal error. The present verse forms part of a discourse which is geared to refuting certain objections of the polytheists which were directed against the Quran. It states in a preparatory manner that only he who is alert to Satan's machinations and seeks God's refuge from him will be able to perceive the true light of the Quran. For those who are complacent about Satan are led off the right track to such a degree that it becomes simply impossible for them to appreciate the message of the Quran.
إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ لَهُ سُلْطَانٌ عَلَى الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَلَى رَبِّهِمْ يَتَوَكَّلُونَ.
Surely, he has no power over those who have faith and who place their trust in their Lord.
إِنَّمَا سُلْطَانُهُ عَلَى الَّذِينَ يَتَوَلَّوْنَهُ وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ بِهِ مُشْرِكُونَ.
He has power only over those who take him as their patron and who, under his influence, associate others with Allah in his divinity.